This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. If our religious differences can fuel conflict, perhaps a focus on similarities can help develop understanding. In search of a common point of departure, some Muslim, Christian, and Jewish leaders have turned to Abraham, a common spiritual ancestor of each faith. They founded Abrahamic Salons as a place for mutual inquiry and respectful religious dialogue. Could this be the beginning of a new social movement, or are religious communities that sponsor these efforts inevitably preaching to the choir? Later in the program, the many facets of a 20th century soldier, statesman, and hero, 40 ways, in fact, to look at Winston Churchill. But first, interfaith dialogue. Has the current political climate inspired or discouraged you in seeking out interfaith understanding? If you've been to one of these Abraham Salons, what was it like? Our phone number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now is Bruce Feiler, the author of Abraham, A Journey to the Heart of Three Faiths. He's with us from Cumulus Studios in Savannah, Georgia. And Bruce, welcome back to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil. Always great to be with you.
Now, the idea of Abrahamic Salons, it may not have been original with you, but you've certainly done a lot to promote it.
Well, as you know, I went looking for Abraham in the wake of September 11th, and you played that quote for me at the top of the hour.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was in New York that morning and watched the towers fall, and as we all recall, we talked a lot in that time, you and I, we heard these questions: who are they, why do they hate us, can the religions get along? And there was Abraham standing at the heart of the religions when they came out of the same being, and yet here we are in conflict. And I went out, and when I was originally working on the book, looking for Abraham, and I think the first thing I discovered was that in the Bible, Abraham is this unifying figure. God blesses Abraham, blesses both of his children, blesses all of their descendants. But what happened over time, and this is largely what my book is about, which ultimately gave birth to what we're going to talk about, is that over time, each of the religions began to elbow one another aside and claim Abraham for itself. So Jews made him into a Jew in many ways, Christians into a Christian in many ways, and Muslims into a Muslim in many ways. And while originally that was frustrating, and a lot of my book on Abraham is about trying to work out that frustration, ultimately I think what I realized is that, well, we can create an Abraham for our time, and that is an Abraham who is informed by all the conflict we see around us.
And it's interesting, you've published this this paper called Abraham, A National Conversation. And among the things you talk about, in turn, you propose ways to form these salons and subjects to discuss. But one of the things that you emphasize is that you should not skip over differences. Explore the ones that bother you and the ones that delight you.
I would say that when I didn't know that much about the interfaith movement when I first set out on this journey looking for Abraham. It's sort of my journey deposited me into this movement. And I thought originally, oh, it's little old ladies drinking tea and making themselves feel good. Well, what I realized is that it is quite a powerful thing. It grows out, in general, the interfaith movement, perhaps most significantly out of Vatican II in the early 1960s, in which first the Catholic Church acknowledged its role in anti-Semitism and said we must seek out a dialogue with Jews. And there's been quite a powerful dialogue between Christians and Jews in the last 30 years that was kicked off by that. And I think that what we all learned on September 11th is that there is this necessity of bringing Muslims into the dialogue. And I think when people first come in, the inclination, as noble as it might sound, is to say, oh, we all have the same roots, or we all have Abraham as our father, or don't we all believe in being kind to your neighbor? And unfortunately, then people tend to go their own way and still have their hostilities and their prejudices. The most effective dialogue I've come to see, and as we've learned over the last year from what's happened about Abraham, is when we confront the differences, when we go right after the hardest things to talk about, and that actually makes it real and in an odd way energizes and inspires people more.
Yeah, but as you mentioned, a lot of people are well, it's hard to get them to discuss religion in the first place. So some of us were raised that in polite society, you never discuss religion or politics, but particularly these profound differences.
Well, I actually think that what you just said is really the heart of it. If I've learned one thing, and what's happened to me since last you and I spoke, even on this broadcast, is that I have been to to 50 cities around the country, and in every community in the country, there is a burgeoning interfaith movement of some kind. And what I've learned is that it is not, there's no national leader, there's no political leader for a wide variety of reasons. There's not even any, there's not a lot of religious leaders who are out there saying we must seek out the other faiths. It's entirely grassroots. And I think that you raise the question whether we're just preaching to the converted. I actually think our first job is to preach to the converted, because we all have to get over that thing that our mamas all told us, which is don't talk about politics and religion in public. Because guess what? The extremists do. What are those planes going into the towers other than extremists saying my God is better than your God, or Jerry Falwell on 60 Minutes saying Muhammad is a terrorist? If we have to realize that those of us who believe in mutual respect, we have to speak out as loud as the people who are spewing hatred, and that right there is just an enormous step.
Yeah, but there's a big step, too, between the choir, if you will, those who are going to be eager to talk about these sorts of things, and the fanatics in every group. There's an awful lot of skeptics in the middle.
Well, I think that's right, and that's who we're talking to in a lot of ways. I think that there's a couple of things that I know for sure. And what I know for sure is that the defining question in the world today is, can the religions figure out a way to relate to one another that is not by trying to extinguish one another, which is largely how the religions have related to one another for the last 2,000 years. What I don't know is how it's going to work out. And I think that what we're seeing is that there is an effort to try to figure out what to do about it, whether we should just stay in our own little world. Because really, the difference now is that the fanatics have weapons. The fanatics have microphones. So I don't think that the percentage of fanatics is any larger than, say, 10% than what it's really ever been.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that now they can speak a lot more loudly if they're flying planes into buildings, or if they're sending bombs into schools, or if they're getting on talk shows in the evenings and ranting and raving as they do.
Our phone number, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's go to John, who joins us on the line from Dearborn, Michigan.
Well, hello. What a pleasure to speak with you. This is my first time on the show. Fascinating conversation. I'm a Catholic, and I also find the topic of Abraham to be very a fascinating first pickup point, if you will, with respect to faith. But how do we get over the squabbling that inevitably crops up as we get deeper down as we get deeper into our own respective faiths? How Abraham is a pickup point, but how do we use him to try to wrap the discussion up towards the end?
Well, I think that's a very, very sophisticated question, because I think that what I have found and what you've talked about is that with the publication of my book, I put out this material on how to have these conversations. And I originally, you're reading from that sheet, Neil, I suspect if you've got the original, it says I wanted 50 to 100 of these things.
Right.
And in the last 6 months, we've had 5,000 people who have gone to my website, which is just my name, Bruce Feiler, FEILER.com, and downloaded this free material. And I think that what the value of Abraham is that if we talk about the present, it often descends into conversations about the Holocaust, about suicide bombers, about Iraq, about borders, about Hebron, about suicide bombing. The advantage of going back to Abraham is that we start at the beginning, and if we understand the original story of what God wanted this little family to be, then if we go step by step with how Jews changed Abraham, how Christians changed Abraham, how Muslims changed Abraham, we begin to see that each of our legacies has played a role in keeping Abraham for itself, so that by the time we get to the present, we're all a lot more informed and we realize that there's plenty of blame to go around. And that's why I think it's why there's been this back to the Bible movement in general in the last 10 years. I mean, there's knowledge in ancient texts, and it helps the present day conversation almost better the present-day conversation if you turn away from the present and go back to the past.
John, you live in Dearborn, or at least you're calling from there. As a Catholic, obviously there's a very large Muslim population in that area. Would you be interested in attending one of these dialogues?
I absolutely would be. Dearborn is a vibrant Muslim community, but at the same time, it's a historic Christian community. It's a perfect place in America for this dialogue to start, if you will. And I find what the author was just saying with respect to untangling some of the confusion, I think that's a great pickup point for people to start to understand one another's faith.
So, I'll give you a plug. NCCJ, the National Council of Community and Justice, which has divisions all over the country. There's an extremely vibrant group in Dearborn. I did an event with them last November. They are doing extremely pioneering programs in Dearborn, in Detroit, in Chicago, in all across the country. But there's a great one in Dearborn. If you reach out to the NCCJ, you'll find programs waiting for you to join.
I will do that. Thank you.
Thanks, John.
You bet. Take care.
Joining us now is the Reverend Marianne Borg. She's director of the Center for Spiritual Development at the Trinity Episcopal Cathedral in Portland, Oregon, and she joined us by phone from her office there. And Reverend, thanks very much for joining us on Talk of the Nation.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Now, your center has developed a program called the Abrahamic Initiative. Can you tell us briefly what the program is and how it's evolved?
Sure. We actually began exploring doing an in-depth program on Christianity, Judaism, and Islam before 9/11. These three traditions, as Bruce says, represent more than half of the human population. They are arguably three of the most powerful religious traditions in the world, and they've done so much to shape the world. They'll continue to do so. And there's also been a lot of blood shed in the name of the one God. And my own sense in working here in my community is that it's time for all of us to reflect more wisely and well on who we are, what is the nature of religious traditions, what's at the heart of our traditions, what's at stake in how we follow them. Beginning about 2 years ago, we were able to bring in Diana Eck, who in her recent work underscores that the United States is the most religiously diverse nation in the world. And Diana Eck helped us to begin to explore religious diversity on our own ground.
Mm-hmm. Well, within your own, your own church, I mean, who's expressed interest in this? Is it your own congregation?
It's been our own congregation, but the Center for Spiritual Development that I direct, we mainly have programming for people outside of our congregation, for people beyond our gates, interfaith and also ecumenical. And people have showed extreme interest in wanting to know more about these three particular faith traditions and to explore them more deeply. So we not only have offered a public lecture series, and Bruce helped to kick this off for us last year in helping to identify some commonalities in the three Abrahamic traditions, but we've our programs have offered public lectures, which have included Diana Eck, Karen Armstrong, Bruce Feiler. Mm-hmm. This year we're going to have Houston Smith, Ali Asani, Vali Nas, Rabbi Lawrence Kushner, and in addition, we will be offering an evening curriculum, a two-year program that will be an in-depth reflective study on Judaism, Christianity, and Islam.
When it works, why does it work? When it doesn't, why doesn't it?
Rumi, the Sufi mystic, has an interesting comment. It's part of a poem. He says, "Beyond wrongdoing and right doing, there is a field, and I will meet you there." I think those of us who are interested in that field, beyond right doing and wrongdoing, I think we have a chance of coming together to explore really what is the heart of our traditions and what is at stake in how we follow them. We can celebrate the particularities of our faith traditions, but that does not suggest exclusivity or absolutism. Evangelism today is not about conversion. It's about learning from one another. And I think those who have been particularly interested in the programs through the center realize that we're asking broad questions about what is the nature of religious dialogue, what's at stake, beyond right doing and wrong doing, where can we meet? And it's what comes out of that field, beyond right doing and wrong doing, that I'm most interested in the work that comes from that place.
Reverend Borg, thanks very much.
You're very welcome.
Marianne Borg directs the Center for Spiritual Development at Trinity Episcopal Cathedral in Portland, Oregon, and she was with us by phone from her office there. We're talking about interfaith dialogues, and when we come back, we'll take more of your calls. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, TOTN at NPR.org. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about interreligious dialogue, and we're taking your calls at 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn at npr.org. Our guest is Bruce Feiler, the author of Abraham, A Journey to the Heart of Three Faiths. And let's speak with Ken, who joins us from Camino, California.
Hi.
Hi.
This is great. What a beautiful conversation. One of the things I'd like to interject, and help me ferret it out because I haven't spoke on the radio before, and so I'm going to be nervous, is when you spoke earlier about how there are these profound differences with the three faiths, what I'd like to do is take a step back and before Abraham and look at what Abraham was trying to describe, which was a way with Yahweh, because Yahweh is the war god. You know, he's the angry desert war god. And when Yahweh stepped away from, when Abraham stepped away, he stepped away from the blood sacrifice, right, the war god. And when you look at Jesus and Muhammad and Abraham, what they've always tried to do is to bring and temper the energy from Yahweh and temper it and bring it back to the people in a way of healing and a way of understanding. And I think until we take a step even before Abraham and understand that our cultures, the three big cultures that are at war with each other right now, really are still based in that blood sacrifice, you know, the war god energy. Then when we talk about Abraham or Muhammad or Jesus, there's a commonality. And what it is trying to explain and understand how we can get along rather than just be locked into who smite who.
I think that's a really interesting point, Neil, because I think that there's no doubt that the God of the Hebrew Bible is at times a violent God. At times he's a peaceful God, but at times he's a violent God. And I think that one of the reasons that Abraham is a flawed vessel for this conversation, but I think he's the best vessel that we've got. And I think the reason he's the best vessel we've got is because Abraham, it's not like Abraham is a saint. He's like Mother Teresa. So you've got Mother Teresa on one end and war on the other end, and you say, well, we'll take Mother Teresa and we can all yawn and go home and nothing will happen.
Right, right.
Abraham introduces in world history the idea of violence in the name of faith. Let us not forget he attempts to kill his first son, Ishmael, by kicking him off into the desert, and his second son, Isaac, by the near sacrifice up on that rock on Moriah in Genesis 22. But what I tend to go back to and where my book on Abraham ends is a journey I made to Hebron, which is the bloodiest place on the planet, the epicenter of this problem, because it's there where Abraham at 175 dies, and Isaac and Ishmael, estranged since childhood, leaders of opposing nations, come, stand side by side, and bury their father. And I think in that moment in Genesis 25 is this hopeful vision. And what's powerful to me is what it doesn't say in that moment in the Bible. It doesn't say they hugged and had dinner and lived happily ever after. It just says they stood side by side. The goal here is not one religion. Mm-hmm. It's not some, you know, Esperanto mumbo jumbo. It is you have your faith, she has her faith, I have my faith. We respect one another, but we don't have to become one another.
And what we're all trying to do, if we really look at that, just exactly what you said, we're all trying to come out of the bloody past so we can live together rather than my religion is better than your religion, which is the bloody past. And we haven't made the distinction, you know, and that distinction I think is very important to pull out so right. that we get the beauty of Abraham.
I think that's right.
Was a huge thing he did. I mean, wow, can you imagine somebody saying, you can't kill that guy? And everybody goes, well, why not? I've been doing it for thousands of years. And Abraham got the distinction, and he stopped the bloody sacrifice.
What I like about what you're saying is that you acknowledge that there is that blood in all of our pasts. I
think one of the things that's troubling
to me about the current dialogue is this idea that Islam is a violent religion, but that Judaism and Christianity don't have the same violence in our past as well.
We all do because we still are all standing, just as a way of saying it, not that it's the truth, but we still are all standing with Yahweh. Mm, we're still standing with the war god as our justification of my prophet's better than your prophet, rather than we all see the war god as the bloody war god, and now let's talk about our prophets and how our prophets have tried to lead us from the blood to the wine or whatever, but, you know, to brotherhood.
Well, Ken, thanks very much.
Thank you very much, guys.
Interesting thought. Yeah. Joining us now is Bruce Lustig, Senior Rabbi of the Washington Hebrew Congregation here in Washington, D.C. He joins us by phone from his home in Cabin John, Maryland. And, Rabbi, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
What your congregation is involved in an interfaith dialogue, right?
Yes, we are. About a little over a year ago, I had the real pleasure of sitting down with your guest today, Bruce Feiler, and we began talking about the possibilities of these Abraham summits and the idea that's behind his book, which has really been a phenomenal catalyst for a new wave of interfaith dialogue.
When you meet and discuss these issues, are there certain subjects that are a big source of conflict and misunderstanding?
I think that the people that self-select to come and participate in these, there's not the issues of the conflict. And I overheard just a little bit of the program before, and I think that part of the issues come is that if we meet and decide that we can talk about what common ground we have and have a distinct respect for each other, there really is the possibility of really inculcating into the next generation the ultimate truths of all of our religious faiths. They are not to win one and out, one over the other. They're really to create a sense of God's harmony here on earth and create an opportunity for a better world and a better society that is created in God's image.
We discussed this subject before a little bit with Bruce Feiler, but self-selected people going to this, is there a lot of point in discussing this issue with people who will come in and say, you had me at Abraham?
Well, I think that there is an opportunity. Look, we are, you know, things have changed in a sense. We have the opportunity to shape a more peaceful future. It's not going to be easy. Look, we're years beyond the legal issues of civil rights, and we still live in with self-selected segregation. We've been working tirelessly for decades to further Jewish and Christian relations, and there's much progress, and yet there'll be faux pas. We'll receive an invitation for an interfaith program and a workshop held on a Friday night. The gap is wide. The issues are difficult, but progress has been made because we've made it, and those of us who believe that we're created in God's image are going to continue to work on this despite the divisiveness and those who have a different goal.
Let's get another caller in. Arnie joins us on the line from Fort Lauderdale.
Hello. Hi. Wonderful program. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have read Mr. Feiler's book quite a while ago, but I really liked it a lot. And
thank you.
A point that is important to me personally, which I hope is also important to you, I think it is, but I honestly don't remember from the book, is that it's important to include secular people who are interested and value tradition from these three faiths, as well as those who are practicing and observant. And I am someone who is, I guess I would call myself a serious cultural Jew, because I've read the Bible, actually both the Jewish and the Christian, large parts of the Bible, studied it, and very interested in it, but not because of a belief in God, but because this is the root of our civilization in the West, and really important to engage with it, and there's a lot of great value in it for me, even as a non-believer. And so I would hope that there would be, I mean, what are your thoughts about including people such as me in that dialogue with all those there who are practicing?
Arnie, because of your phone problems, I'm going to hang up on you, but thanks for the call, but you can listen off the air. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Why don't you go ahead, Bruce?
Well, the answer is I am you, and I came into this whole process 5-6 years ago with my book, Walking the Bible, and I hadn't read the Bible in 20 years. I'm not a religiously trained person. I'm a lay person who started asking these questions and who ended up in the middle of this conversation. So I think the conversation welcomes people who haven't read the Bible in 20 years, as I had not, who read it every day. I love what Marianne Borg said about, I have found in years of talking about these issues that there is a small band of fundamentalists on the believing end who say, I have all the answers. There's a small band of fundamentalist non-believers, sort of evangelical atheists on the other end. But everybody in the middle, I can have a conversation with. And I think that I'm a lay person. I've just been out there saying, join this conversation. And what's one of the reasons it's worked is because lay people have come in because of spiritual leaders like Marianne Borg and Bruce Lustig and 20 others I could mention on the air right now. And it, in fact, it has to come from us who are frustrated, in some ways tugging our religious leaders in that direction.
Rabbi Lustig, let me ask you about that. How do you reach out to people who are not part of the congregation and not just secular people, but again, you know, go beyond the self-selected?
Well, the Abraham Summit that we held was open to the entire public. We had well over 800 in attendance. We had a wonderful evening. Bruce Feiler was there, James Carroll, Professor Akbar Ahmed. And there was the beginnings at that time of this opportunity to begin to dialogue face to face. And I think that that is what's so critical. And I believe that that's the essence of what Bruce Feiler has given us the opportunity to do. Listen, the theologian Buber talked about the sense of dialogue, that we have two types of relationships, I, it, and I, thou. We can treat individuals as others, the it, or we can have a thou relationship with them. And I think that that's what is happening here, is that if we're able to put aside some of our very divisive differences at times, we have the opportunity to embrace others and see them and see the opportunities for a better world.
Well, thanks very much for being with us today.
I appreciate it.
Senior Rabbi Bruce Lustig leads the Washington Hebrew Congregation, and he was with us by phone from his home in Cambridgeshire, Maryland. And Bruce Feiler, I just wanted to ask you, let's go to another phone call and go to Kate, who's on the line with us from Phoenix.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my phone call.
Sure.
I have read Mr. Feiler's book on Moses, and I had never heard of him or his books in the past. I've been a born-again Christian for over 28 years and studied Scripture and in discipleship seriously for all these years and followed very committed. And I was so blessed and blown away by your book, sir. And I have to tell you that I wished I was with you on your experience, because you allowed God to speak to you in such a way. And I think that your book truly serves, as the rabbi was saying earlier, fundamental Christians oftentimes get into this very stringent mode of teaching and completely disallow sometimes for a different perspective. And yours was phenomenal for me as a Christian, and it made me understand Old Testament and Jesus in a new way that I had never seen before. And I was completely humbled and desired to know more because of your book, sir. Bruce, it was wonderful.
Well, I'm getting emotional here, because the last question was from a secular American Jew, and here we have a call from a fundamentalist Christian saying that the idea of looking at these questions with an open mind is a powerful thing, and I think it cannot be denied. And I think that, you know, what's striking to me about all of this, Neil, is that one of the questions behind our conversation today is, why is this working? Why now? And I think the answer is because people are craving hope. And in the world today, we've realized that we can't just sit back and say, oh, they solved that problem over there in Kabul or Baghdad or Jerusalem. It has to happen in every neighborhood and in every community and in every heart. And I think that's what I have found in the last year, is that people are willing to be open-minded about their own faith and say, I'm going to take a first step. I'm going to make that call to a neighbor. I'm going to sit down, and I'm going to begin this conversation. And that's the only way it's going to happen.
We're speaking with Bruce Feiler, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And joining us now is Karim Adib, imam and founder of the American Institute for Islamic and Arabic Studies. He's with us from his home in Fairfield, Connecticut. And imam, good of you to join us on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure and an honor.
You've been involved in several interfaith discussions in recent months. What has surprised you most?
Well, what has surprised me most is that I was very blessed to find out that there is a will among all the people of Abrahamic faith, mainly Jews, Christians, and Muslims, to come together to try to see each other as a human beings rather than as differences, different people. I was very impressed with the will to enter into dialogue without trying to be politically correct by phrasing the problems the way they are, looking for a solution. And this was a blessing in itself.
Is bluntness, candor in that conversation, is that a useful thing, or does that tend to bruise feelings?
Well, if you have the will to, let's put it this way. You know, we, Adam, our forefather, was neither Jewish nor Christian nor American nor Iraqi nor Muslim. If you look at humanity as a common denominator, then everything falls in line. Of course, we are different. It is I will achieve a sense of civilization, of civilized behavior, if I disagree with you and still I respect your point of view.
Now, I'm sure, as we've mentioned before, one thing that tends to come up in these conversations is the belief of some people that the Muslim faith supports violence, indeed terrorism.
Well, I don't believe that people who disagree with me, I don't believe that you are either with me or against me. I think those who disagree with me are not educated in my point of view. Number one, I speak six languages. I've read the Quran in six languages, and none of the languages has given its true translation, which is in Arabic. Islam has never, never professed in its teaching violence at all. And I could quote you the Bible on that. Now, there are some Muslims who use Islam or quotation from the Quran to justify aggression or war or terrorism. It's the same thing in Ireland. I mean, you have two factions within Christianity that are fighting each other. And up to recently, some people justified segregation in the South on the basis of scripture. So actually, you know, they say the religion and patriotism is the last bastion of the scoundrel. Actually, we should put religion in its proper perspective, that we are all creation of God, that God, if he has willed, he would have made us alike. But in making us different, he is trying us, and he wants us to accept each other, to recognize each other. And in the Quran it says, we have created you from a single man and woman, meaning Adam and Eve, so that you may recognize each other. Recognize means respect. Does not mean colonize or abuse or take advantage of or whatever. But Islam has never taught, does not teach violence at all. In fact, the word Islam comes from submission and from peace. But if some Muslims wants to take the Quran out of context, that's their problem.
Imam Adib, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Karim Adib is Imam and founder of the American Institute for Islamic and Arabic Studies in Fairfield, Connecticut. And Bruce Feiler, we're running out of time. Can you tell us in 15 seconds where this movement goes from here?
The answer is the movement is growing from the grassroots up, and you're starting to see religious leaders and political leaders responding. And I think the answer lies in everyone's hands. Go to brucefeiler.com, download this material. Everybody can make the phone call, and that's how it's going to happen. And as he said, real change has happened in the last 50 years, and I really think it's an open question, and the question therefore lies with all of us.
Bruce Feiler, the author of Abraham, A Journey to the Heart of Three Faiths. As always, thanks very much for being with us, Bruce.
Take care, Neil.
We'll be back after a break. We're going to be discussing 40 ways to look at Winston Churchill. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.